And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 682. We're coming at you on a Monday, so that means we're recapping the week in Fab. Week 20 Fab will get recapped tonight. We're going to talk some surprise July performers at the batter's box and on the mound, according to the FanGraphs Player Rater, and much, much more as we get rolling with you here. But to join me, as he does on most every Monday now, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bubba, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on again. And yeah, kind of continuing with our trend of doing the risers or fallers for the last 30 days or month. And pretty good list that you got for us to talk about tonight on top of the usual fab that we cover. So also a little bit later. So hopefully it's just as good as usual, however good that normally is. But yeah, looking forward to the show.
Yep, it'll be good. Usually I'm running home from work and jumping into the chair to do it. Now I have a little time to debrief. Not much. I was busy doing other stuff, but definitely a different time of day, which could help, like you said, make things happen. So we'll see how that pans out. But let's get cracking at it. Let's talk about some of the July standouts. I know the last 30 days on the FanGraphs Player Rater. So give or take, it's the month of July. Let's just pretend that's what it is. And we're going to look at Brent Rooker, who comes in as the number one overall player over the last 30 days, according to the FanGraphs Player Rater, which is pretty impressive stuff. For one, Brent Rooker, dude's been on a mission on the season. You know, he's hitting 290 with 28 home runs. If we want to just look back, since July 1st, they did have the All-Star breaks. Maybe this is the last 30 days. Dude's hitting 367, 13 home runs since July 1st. That's almost half of what he has on the season. What a run he's been on. What are your thoughts on Brent Rooker? Because I think we can all agree, not sustainable, but at the same time, power is legit to an extent.
Agreed. Yeah, he really lights up Statcast all red for year to date. So it's not just a hot streak. I mean, he is on fire right now, but the numbers all year long support that he should have great power numbers. The one thing though is still the K rate year to date 30.3%, which is eighth percentile, so not very good. But he's just hitting the ball so hard that he's kind of overcoming that deficiency in this game, which is fine. I mean, we see players do it all the time. And I will say though, so I pulled up, I think a similar time frame as what the fan of the Player Rater has for its data, but over his last 23 games, Rooker has a 21% K rate. So he's taken off a third of what it typically is in the season. So that's really helping him out. His BABIP's 345 over that period. So not crazy average. And what I have is 353, and he has some speed. The one thing though, like for going forward with Rooker is that he's 29. He's kind of a late, well, he kind of broke out last year with 30 homers. So he was 28 last year, but now he has the average to go with it, and he does chip in some steals. He has 7 this year so far, so that's awesome. And, yeah, I remember, like, I think it was actually the RotoWire podcast. They were talking about Rooker and how he was an ad early on in the year if people dropped him. And if you're able to add Rooker or draft him late and hold on to him, he's really been one of those picks that really sets you apart from the rest of your competitors. So good for Rooker, and I'm not sure if he'll keep it up at this rate, but maybe the average will dip, but I think the power will be there through the last 2 months.
Yep, I agree. Power is legit, so I'm a fan of this. He's going to hit in the middle of the order, a good lineup that, number one lineup in baseball in July. Do I expect him to be the number one lineup in August? No, but it's a legit team that's young enough and talented enough to be a top 10 offense in baseball. Like, they should. I don't see a massive drop-off from, like, if Butler slumps, you have Andujar or vice versa. Blade's had his ups and downs. Sheeman, like, Gelof struggling right now, but no one would be shocked if he got a streak in him again. Like, they have Bangaliers is doing his thing. Like, there's enough guys in that lineup to, if one guy's slumping, another guy could pick him up on, like, previous Oakland Athletics teams where it was one or two guys and then you pray type situation. This team could be entertaining for the next couple of months, which the biggest takeaway for Rooker for me, the fact he didn't get traded, I'm hoping that means he gets to play in Sacramento next year, because you think this power is fun? Just wait till he gets to play there when it's 110 degrees. That's what I'm looking forward to, folks. So good on Brent Rooker. Like you said, he's carrying some teams. 13 home runs since July 1st is just bonkers stuff. Eugenio Suarez was left dead to rights, expecting Jordan Lawler to take his spot. Then Jordan Lawler gets hurt for the 12th time this year and won't be able to come back. So Eugenio Suarez kept his job. Over the last 30 days, he's fourth offensively on the FanGraphs Player Rater. And I thought that stood out because we knew Eugenio's been swinging it better, but fourth overall for hitters is pretty darn impressive. Since July 1st, 317 average, 10 home runs for Suarez, 27 RBIs, 23 runs scored. The overall stat line, not great, but if, you know, I picked him up in a couple leagues, like I'm going to ride out this hot streak as long as I can. It's been a good few weeks since then. What's your thoughts on Suarez? Because I think we were all expecting maybe this was the end. Like in draft season, you're okay. He's a discount, no average, good power, 30 home run power. Okay. Right now he's even hitting for average, which is pretty fun.
It is. And I pulled up Suarez's rolling graphs on FanGraphs. And so one thing that's really happened recently that coincides with this is his BABIP's gone up. But that's also been accompanied by an increase in hard hit percentage. So his hard hit as of the last 40 game rolling average is like 40. That's wrong. That's 41.1%. So that's really good. He was down. His lowest point this year was 24.2%. So he was really slumping. And I did have Suarez in a main event. And I was looking at his transactions on NFBC for my teams. And I was the only team in that I'm in or out of the leagues where I dropped him. And that was week 11. And of course, well, I mean, he didn't really do much after that, but from week 15 on, he's just been on fire. So this is currently week 20, I believe. So he has probably all those homers you're just mentioning. Yeah, he's been unbelievably hot recently. And yeah, Suarez, I did keep him in one league, so I didn't have him completely jump ship. And I've been playing him, which is I think I mentioned before. I've been trying to cut Suarez because of how bad he was doing. But now it's just one of those things. Yeah, I agree with your take about how he was kind of a value in drafts. I was kind of between him and Chapman, and both actually Matt Chapman, both kind of actually worked out, it seems like, so as of right now. And nothing really stands out as too crazy in Eugenio Suarez's underlying profile last 30 days or so. He's just been hitting the ball much better, and he's probably just seeing it well. It's sometimes all you can really say.
Yeah, and that's the biggest takeaway when I look at Eugenio is it's not like, you know, sure, you could say it's fluky because he didn't do it for the first 3 months of the year or whatever. But like you said, you look at all the metrics and this, that, and the other, and he's actually just playing well. He's hitting well. Like that's could it stop at any moment? Sure. But it's one of those things that it could be kind of sustainable, actually, which is pretty crazy to think of Eugenio. Like, you know, maybe not hitting 320, but he could hit 275 the rest of the way. And I wouldn't be surprised just by the profile we're seeing in him. And not to mention on a very good Diamondbacks offense. I was talking about this on Monday morning on Leading Off with Welsh. Over the last 30 days, they're striking out less than 18% versus right-handed pitching. And Suarez is the lefty masher, but he's been hitting versus righties too. Like, this team's very productive at the plate, and that helps, obviously, a lot of players. If you're slumping, it helps when the other guys are picking you up and give you that confidence to keep going. So Suarez could be a fun one because, like you said, you were trying to drop him. I literally said, okay, I'll pick him up for a couple bucks. We'll see where it goes. I have no plans on dropping him at the moment. So that's pretty fun, and like I said, see where things go. Xavier Edwards, this one I'm pretty pumped on because been on this train since the get-go with Edwards once he got called up, and then the whole speculation of, you know, maybe he'll lead off if Chisholm gets traded, and well, that has happened, of course. And Xavier Edwards is the 13th hitter on the player radar over the last 30 days, and since he was called up on July 2nd, so almost coincides perfectly with our exercise, Edwards is hitting .396 as he entered Monday, did pretty well on Monday as well. One home run, you knew you weren't getting power, but 17 runs, 13 RBIs, 11 stolen bases, and honestly, been amazing plate discipline for a young player like Xavier Edwards. I'm really pumped to see that. So I don't have a lot to say. I'm going to let you do the talking on this one, but I love what he can bring to the table. Another one of these late, you know, later in the season, midway point, middle infielders that have blessed us when middle infield looks so dire at times on the FAB market. Edwards has been a lifesaver, especially if you needed steals.
For sure. And I want to give the proper person credit. I think it was the Dust Mite was tweeting how he's basically this year's John Birdie from a couple years ago.
Morning. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's a same team, probably same position too. It's kind of funny how the Marlins can help you out sometimes with these players. And yeah, so you hit all the highlights on Edwards. Couple things I just want to bring up because I do have him on a main event and also on a DC Edwards and is his splits because he's a switch hitter. And I did hear Waxman talking about how the Marlins have a very left-handed heavy schedule over the next maybe 50 rest of the season. And Xavier splits. So he's a 1,000 OPS versus lefties, 1,015, and a 916 OPS versus righties. So he's no split issue currently for Edwards. The one thing, though, is like you mentioned, the average is he's not going to hit 382 all year unless he's the next Luis Arraez or, I don't know, Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn, whoever you want to – pick your favorite average hitter of all time. But so with that in mind, I'm benefiting from Edwards. Sounds like you are as well. Is when you want to keep this great production. Yeah. It's when the drop comes. You want to jump off and not drop Edwards, but just sit him. And then, so it's once he starts slumping, and you got, it's hard to identify that slump. Okay, maybe he goes like 1 for 9 over like a Monday through Thursday or something like that. Maybe then you have to think about, okay, maybe I need to sit him and see if he gets hot again. Because if he goes for an extended slump where he hits like 200, maybe he still gets you steals, so that's helping you. But if he's now he's draining that average gain that he's helped so far, it could be detrimental to what he's done for you. And like, it's just something to keep in mind. Maybe he hits 300 the rest of the way and it's not noticeable. Who knows? But because it's only 2 months left, but it's something to keep in mind with Edwards when someone's running so hot as like he is. You don't want to be on the downside when he kind of goes back to comes back down to earth.
Yep, like Ryan likes to say, he could be a Gene Segura guy because we've fallen in love with him. We just trust him to go out there, hit for average, steal bases, score some runs here and there. So you just kind of forget about him. Like, he's our shortstop, middle infielder. If he goes in a slump, that could be a problem type thing. So it's definitely one to keep an eye. But yeah, he's a stud. Like the biggest takeaway there when you said, like, just keep an eye on him is don't drop him, people. Bench him. Totally fine. Bench him. Do not drop Xavier Edwards.
He's hitting leadoffs. He's getting all those at-bats.
Yeah.
It's so valuable.
He's young. He'll be streaky. Like, in the end, I still think he's going to have a very good final 2 months, but there will be a slump in there that if he can play things right, and it's tough to do. Like, you might not play it right. But like Ben said, is if you can, especially in NFBC where you got the two halves of the weeks, if, say, like you said, he goes 1 for 9, sits one of the first games, then you see he's got two lefties over the weekend or something, you're like, you know what, let's give him the weekend off. Let's throw someone else in there. Then we'll reevaluate on Monday type situation. Totally normal thing to do, probably a smart thing to do. And that's what you do with Xavier Edwards. It'll be fun to see where he kind of gets going in early drafts this offseason. Jake Berger, his teammate, 15th on the Raiders. So the Marlins have the 13th and the 15th player on the player radar. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. That tells you how impressive things are. And I brought this to the attention of one co-host that I have that shall not be named at this moment, because he told me Jake Berger wasn't good. And that I have a beer bet against this one co-host that I do things with. And I have Berger, and I mentioned this on Thursday night. He's like, oh, he's actually been pretty good. Since July 1st, Jake Berger, 10 home runs, hitting .294. Still strikes out a lot. I'm not going to deny that. But what I love to see, because he was doing this when I was still interested in Berger all along, 16% barrel rate, 50, almost 55% hard hit rate. Even when he was struggling to produce the overall stats, the quality of contact was still there with Jake Berger. I was worried the oblique injury was harnessing him. Maybe post all-star break, he got to rest a little, let the oblique heal some more. I don't know. Big Jake Berger fan here, and I think a fun 2 months are coming. Whoever stayed on board might have some fun coming up.
For sure. It's good to see him bounce back, because I like Berger. I didn't get him as many teams as I probably would have thought I would have, but I'm glad I stuck with him. And the big thing in that period of July, actually, for the month, he hit .287. So that's awesome. But the K, like I think you mentioned, the K rate is still high, but he just hits the ball so hard that it's going to, he kind of like with Rooker, they're going to survive a little bit because they hit the ball so well when they make contact. And even like Berger's K rate is rolling 40 game average is kind of creeping towards 30 over the most recent period. But the BABIP hasn't gotten too crazy either. So that's good. It's a good sign for me. So he doesn't have like a .380 BABIP with a 30% K rate, because that kind of means it could be a pretty big collapse. But he's around .300, .290 with his BABIP. So that tells me that what he's doing is somewhat sustainable, as long as the Ks don't get a little too much more out of control. And if I add the swing strike rate to this, yeah, it's definitely elevated. He's like at 16.5% over the last 40 days. So it's definitely high, but it's not like it's 19 or 20%. And I think Berger he kind of did this last year. I don't think he struck out as much last year, but, and also you just mentioned how good the Marlins have been. So, and also I want to say, so maybe my Martin Perez wasn't a great idea to stream him, because he's facing the Marlins right this week, but it's a different story. And I like Berger. Hopefully he stays healthy. Hopefully he doesn't tweak that oblique, because as everyone knows, they're very fickle injuries. Those obliques, they can pop up very easily. And like when Berger first came back, it probably was lingering a little bit still. And it's good to see him back.
Yep. I wouldn't worry. The Marlins are playing much better, but they still struggle versus lefties. Jonah Bride is not, he's having a good run. Like, if you want to stream Martin Perez in a 15, it's probably not the worst thing you can do. Because, you know, Brian De La Cruz was a guy I would have been worried about. He's not there anymore. Jess Chisholm, not there. Like, they traded nine of their, you know, 26-man, like, starting roster that day. That was insane to watch. So, a lot of moving parts in Miami that I would not be too concerned on at the moment. Two more hitters, then we'll talk about a handful of pitchers here as well. And I was trying not to be a homer here, but Tyler Fitzgerald, 21st on the list, went deep again on Monday night. But entering Monday, hitting .333 since the start of July, 10 home runs, 19 ribbies, stolen base. My concern always was he strikes out a lot and this, that. He's striking out a lot and he's making good contact because the power we saw in the minors, like all the time, he'd go down there and just crush it. Didn't get consistent run in the bigs. Now he's getting that when they got rid of Nick Ahmed. I'm honestly surprised he's not running. I've said it on a lot of shows. That's my biggest surprise with Fitzgerald. I thought he was going to be like more of a lot of speed with a little bit of power. It's kind of the opposite right now. So what's your thoughts on Fitzgerald? Because I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I'm happily not seeing it yet.
Yeah, I don't blame you for picking Fitzgerald, though. I could see picking him based on where he was ranked. And I'm not a Giants fan. But so last week, Fitzgerald had 20 at-bats. He struck out 9 times. So that's the biggest red flag and for him to sustain what he's doing. And no one expected him to continue hitting 5 homers per week like he did last week or 2 weeks ago when we last talked about Fitzgerald. But he's has 10 homers over the last 4 weeks. So he's definitely showing the pop. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the steals come around, if they ever do. Tyler didn't steal, and now Fitzgerald's like the fastest guy in the majors, and he's not stealing, so maybe there's something there.
But Matt Chapman still does. Let's not forget that. Unbelievable stuff.
I don't know. Maybe he paid off Bochy or something. Who knows?
That's insane.
Yeah, so yeah, Fitzgerald, it's kind of like the same boat as Xavier Edwards, I would say, where once you see a sign of decline, maybe then you bench him and see what happens, but because you don't want to take away all the – like at least he's hit for good average while he's been playing the last couple weeks. And with that K rate, he could definitely crush your average if he stays in your lineup and does Gene Segura things. But other than that, yep, great eligibility for NFBC and probably other formats as well. So just keep rolling them out there.
Yep, keep rolling them out, see where it goes. It's been a fun ride, to say the least. And I thought he was kind of slumping about a week ago over the weekend. Then he goes into Cincinnati, hits a couple home runs. It's a home run the first game in Washington. Like, yeah, we're back. So, but there will be some skids. Like, Xavier Edwards at least has the speed to hit the ball on the ground. I'm like, he might not, like, have a horrible slump type thing where, you know, there could be a couple, like, 4K games with Fitzgerald that wouldn't shock me. And you're just like, oof, this is not good. But as long as the Giants keep putting him out there, you got to get a pretty pump on what we get there. Last hitter, and this one really surprised me. He was a top 30 player. And then I looked back, he had a couple home runs against the Giants this past week. And that's Tyler Stevenson of the Cincinnati Reds, catcher for the Reds. A guy that was always kind of in the, is he a catcher one? Is he a catcher two on draft day? Like a couple of years ago, everyone liked him because, you know, we saw this like small sample of totally great hard hit guy, good average, all these things, going to play first base. All the storylines you want to hear from a catcher. Then he got hurt a few times, didn't pan out. This year, extremely slow start for Tyler Stevenson. But over the since July 1st, hitting .244, so like most catchers, honestly. But 7 home runs, 16 RBIs, and 15 runs scored. That is big boy. That's like Ryan Jeffers in April production. So Stevenson's doing some things that kind of flew under my radar, so I wanted to bring him up on today's show. So what's your thoughts on Tyler Stevenson?
In week 16, he had a 4-homer week, so maybe that's the game you were talking about against the Giants. But I know he had a 2-homer game very recently. Yeah, on the 30, he had 2-homer. No, that was the game against the Giants.
Yeah, that was against the Giants. Remember that one very clearly. Yep.
And that 5-homer week or that 4-homer week was very impressive. But it really stands out, though, because Stevenson was one of those, I don't know, it's like a catcher dead zone, to take a fancy football term. I feel like he was going in the Jeffers ADP just because he was playing mostly full-time plate appearance on the Reds. And so that week when he had 4 homers, Stevenson, he had 29 at-bats. But other than that, since week 12, he's been between like 12 and 17. So I wouldn't expect great production from Stevenson. He is historically a very ground ball heavy player. I'm not sure exactly how that looks this year. But also one of the things too that was nice about Stevenson was he plays in Cincinnati, so he could get a little boost from the favorable home park. And but over the last 30 days or so, his BABIP is only .260, but he's not very fast. So he's not even really getting too lucky. The K rate isn't that bad. The walk rate's pretty solid. It's he's definitely someone you should probably be playing right now in a two-catcher league. It's just he's not very exciting because he's kind of proven that 1 year when he had 300, I mean, it was pretty – or 286 in like half a season was kind of fluky, I think. He's more of like a 240 hitter now, at least over the last 2 years, Stevenson. But if you're desperate at catcher, which I know I've been kind of filtering back and forth on – pretty poor catchers for my C2s and my main events, my 15s. I would take Stevenson in a heartbeat. It's just, I guess it depends on how deep your league is and also what are the options. But yeah, he's good to see him playing well right now. I just don't know if I expect him to keep anything like this up going forward.
Yeah, no, that's my thing with Stevenson. You write it while it's hot. Like, he's 100% no C's, but I know like in Yahoo and ESPN, maybe 50% at best. Like, he's widely available. So one thing I've learned, I don't play in those formats as much anymore. If I did, I know Ben is, and it also depends on your league. Like, whenever I see those numbers and I play in leagues with people that are very smart with fantasy and very good with fantasy, and I never have these players on the waiver wire. So it's kind of one of those things. But if you're in certain leagues, like, I'd be streaming catcher almost, at least your catcher too. There's like so many, just ride the hot hand at catcher in those Yahoo leagues. If you're in the right league, I'm saying, and Stevenson would be one of those guys right now. You could kind of plug in, plug out, and have some fun in those regards. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on.
Definitely at home game for home series.
Yes. Next week they play, I believe, 6, if not 7 at home. So that's one you want to jump. I mentioned that with Fraley on Thursday night show with Ryan that, and right now, subject to change, all righties next week too, Great American. So get your Bensons, even though he struggled, but deep leagues and Fraley's and whatnot, could be a fun one. But again, subject to change. We have a few days before all those rotations go up in flames. All right, we talked about six hitters. Let's talk about six pitchers for the month of July. And let's start with one, Spencer Schwellenbach. The Braves might have lost out on Strider. Trust me, they'd still like to have Strider. But Schwellenbach's been doing his best Strider impression of late, is the best I can say. He's fifth on the player rater over the last 30 days. And since July 1st, Schwellenbach has made 5 starts. He's gone at least 6 innings in each start, allowed 9 runs with 38 Ks and 33 and a third. The impressive thing to me, I know you'll go deeper into the numbers here, but a near 30% K to walk for Schwellenbach has been outstanding. And I'm going to sit here and be the first to say, when he first got called up, and it was rough early on, I was very like, nope, not doing this thing. A lot of pitch to contact. Then I started to see improvements. I missed out in some leagues, but where I could find chances, I got him in like 3 leagues now. And gosh darn, I'm glad I at least did that, because I would have really kicked myself if I got none. But the skills changed. You could see the changes being made. So what do you see when you see Spencer Schwellenbach?
Yeah, you hit all the high points with him. So in July, to put into this basic numbers, he had 1 walk and 28 strikeouts. So that's fun. That's like when Phil Hughes set the record for like the highest K-minus walk percentage of history. It's like that. That's unbelievable. And then he's through 7 innings with 10 Ks, no walks in his last start. So he's definitely they found something with Schwellenbach, I think, the Braves. And I kind of wish I was a little more aggressive. Also, too, with the deeper leagues, someone on the Braves is going to get scooped up for the win potential, and he's definitely gotten that. So Schwellenbach has 3 wins in his last 5 starts, so that's also great. And they definitely need him going forward because of all the injuries, and now the latest loss, Reynaldo Lopez, to the IL. And, yeah, he's going deep into games as well, 6-7, 6-7, 7 over his last 5 innings. Those are his innings pitch total. And one of those games was against the Phillies. He held them to 1 run over 6 innings, kept the Padres in check. And of course, one of the worst games was, of course, against the Marlins. They scored 3 against them. But
I warned you. No, I was kidding.
I know. My Martin Perez is screwed. It's going to be ugly this week. No. But, yeah, Schwellenbach seems to be one of those Braves rookies that's finally hitting. And I don't have too much more detail to go into with him right now. It's still a small sample with him, only 11 games started. But definitely promising for his future. And definitely add him if he's available in a shallower league, I would say.
Yeah, most definitely. It's kind of crazy because I know I'm not a prospect guy. I've preached that over and over again. But I didn't really have an idea who Schwellenbach was when all things were said and done. But, like, you've heard of Dylan Dodd. You've heard of A.J. Smith-Shawver. Even Darius Vines had chances last year. Like, there was a slew of these guys as injuries took place. Like, okay, one of these guys, like, yes, Schwarber, like, all these things. Schwellenbach was the one that got her done. So it's pretty cool to see. And that's why sometimes you just got to, as a baseball fan, go, I love baseball. Because it's just like, I don't know where this guy gets his shot and starts to thrive. And we'll see where it goes from there. Speaking of another guy who I've been made fun of for a few years because I've been a Brady Singer fan, I've taken ridicule from certain people because I'm a Brady Singer fan. But over the month of July, Singer, 13th on the player rater. What's most impressive to me, it's three straight starts of seven innings or more, four out of the last five, because the one he didn't, he left with he didn't perform well, but he also, I believe, took a comebacker in that one. So four out of five starts, at least seven innings with four runs total in those four starts. He's got 30 Ks, over 35 and two-thirds in his six July starts, four wins, which is important. So Singer's doing everything a team could ask for right now by eating up innings and getting to a good bullpen now with Ursig and Harvey and company in the back end. Like, it's big for the Royals. So what do you got on Brady Singer, who it feels like is finding his groove right now?
Yeah, I would say so. I did buy in on one team. I got burned by Singer last year. I had him ranked way too high for based on how the underlying numbers looked going out of 2022. But so the one thing that's big with Singer is he added a pitch. So he throws a four-seamer now. Before, he was very almost exclusively slider and sinker. Over 90% of the time last year is what he threw those two pitches. And now his four-seamer's up to 12% on the year. So not a whole lot, but he mixes it in. So I guess if you're on, if you're expecting that sinker, then the ball stays straight on you. It could kind of screw with you. So I could see how it could be effective as long as he places it and things like that. But so looking at his year-to-date underlying metrics, Singer, it's definitely the quality of contact is a little concerning. His xERA on the year is 4.45, but the FIP and the xFIP are roughly around 3.7. His Sierra is 3.85, so kind of the same range. So definitely a very serviceable starter. He's definitely pitched better than those metrics say he has. He's about to run lower, his 2.88 ERA. But he's not walking batters. It's more just about when the ball is put in play, it's hit very hard. I'm not sure how the – well, I mean, with Witt at shortstop, it probably helps a lot too. The Royals have historically had good defenses, so maybe that's what's helping Singer out again. But there's a lot of blue on his Statcast page, and I actually sat Singer for this week against the Red Sox. I didn't trust him because I had some better options. But I checked the box score, and he's got two runs in five innings. So I don't know what the whip's looking like, but he's surviving so far, so that's a good thing. Gives me confidence going forward. And, yeah, it's where Singer was going in drafts, I mean, it's all profit. Now it's just making – kind of like with the other guys I mentioned before, like Xavier Edwards and Tyler Fitzgerald, just make sure you don't ruin all the goodness that these guys have given you so far by continuing to play them without even thinking about it. Just – I'd still pick my spots with Singer.
Yes.
Especially in a 12-teamer or a 10 where you have better options, hopefully. It was a 15 where I sat him, but I used a reliever instead. So just be smart with Singer, and he's definitely bounced back nicely this year.
Yeah, five innings, but you're right about the whip. Eight hits and one walk, so nine runners in those five innings. So the whip will get you there to the two runs and five Ks overall. Does he not have a second start this week?
They're one of the five-game teams.
That's what I thought. Okay, that's right. That's right.
Maybe so next week he'll be a good start. No,
that's why it's not a bad start, and I agree with Singer. Like, he's been great, but I'm even like, yeah, like he's in that Gossman world with me. Like, I sat Gossman in a couple leagues this week, played him in others where I didn't have options. Like, there's certain guys right now where definitely not drops, but not auto starts. We call them bench streamers, and Singer's a very good bench streamer. He's not Kyle Gibson. He's better. So remember that.
So Jose Quintana. Yeah, for Singer next week, real quick. He's at Minnesota, at Cincinnati. Would you start him?
That is tough. I probably would. Yeah. Those are two good teams, especially that Great American game. I think I would, but just buckle up is the best I would say. Because
I
just love the Royals offense behind them. Like, man, I think he's good for at least one win in those two games is the thing. And then gets you at least a K an inning. Just hope he doesn't get blown up is the million-dollar question.
Projected to face Pablo and then Abbott in those starts. So the Pablo one, I don't know.
That's tough. That's tough.
Yeah. Tough decision for next week for me.
Let's hope things get shifted around in that rotation. And we can worry about something the following week because that's tough to sit a guy like Singer for a two-start, but that's a very difficult two-start, to say the least. All right, Jose Quintana. This is a name that showed up on the list. I figured it would surprise many, so we'll discuss him for a minute. He is 15th over the last 30 days on the Fangraphs player rating when it comes to pitching. And in Quintana, I've highlighted on a couple other pieces of my content, either podcast or writing, I don't know. But he made one August start, but over his last six starts, he made five in July. He's got a 2.52 ERA, 29 Ks in 35 innings. What I love about Quintana, he's going usually six innings most starts, at least five, obviously. But like in his five to July starts, three wins. Like when you're getting a streamer, you want wins. And Quintana's been able to do that for most of the season. But the fact, I think we discussed it on the show before, it feels like their player rater really appreciates wins and ERA. And he did both of those very well in July. So that's why he's 15th on the list, in my opinion. But what's your thoughts when you look at Quintana? Because I think we know there is a lot of risk involved in Jose Quintana.
For sure. So I pulled up his rolling graphs on FanGraphs, five-game rolling average. So Quintana has actually gotten strikeouts at a better rate recently, kind of hovering in the low 20s or less handful of games. But at the same time, the BABIP most recently has dipped to 186. So he's definitely gotten lucky with the batted ball luck. And he's never been a big strikeout guy. So on the year, he has like a pretty high walk rate. If I go back, his like indicators were roughly in the mid fours, maybe five for his ERA estimator. So definitely getting kind of one of those hot streaks right now, which kind of makes sense as to why he's at the top of the player rater. Kind of like with Singer, but I'd be more confident starting Singer going forward than I would Quintana. Quintana's definitely a matchup play still. I think he had fairly decent matchups over this period, but so I was actually starting him in a main event Quintana. So I was trying to, I sat him this week just because I think the Mariners are starting to get a little hotter. They had some big, put up some big run totals against a few pitchers last week, and I was a little worried about that. But Quintana faced the Angels last time, and see, this is the problem. He had four walks, four Ks in that start and five innings against the Angels. And then against the Yankees, he had six Ks, five walks and five innings. So it's the walks kind of jump out of nowhere for him. And so he's definitely prone to those blowups. I mean, he's kind of been able to limit the damage, but it's because the hits are allowed are like 3-5-3. The one game he had one hit allowed against the Nationals. So it's just, yeah, like the BABIP, low BABIP makes sense with how he's performed lately. And just be careful. Like if he's in a good matchup versus the Rockies, but even they kind of blew him up. That was his worst start over the last several, five runs and five and two thirds. So he's one of those guys where he's definitely like a grenade. He can just go off at any time. It's just, but if you're desperate for starters and you need someone, he's a fine stream. It's just be careful with Quintana. He's not bulletproof.
Yep. Beware. That's a very good point. Like I love him for streams, but yeah, you don't stream him versus everybody. That's for sure. Another guy I've been pounding the pavement for as a stream, and people look at me like I'm crazy because it's a Rockies pitcher, is Kyle Freeland. And I get it. It's a Rockies pitcher, but Freeland's one of the few Rockies pitchers over the recent memory that actually could survive Coors Field when he was healthy. Well, he's come back from the IL and looks pretty healthy. He made five starts in July, and Freeland, he allowed 12 runs in 30 innings. He allowed six runs in one start. Four of the other five starts, two were in runs or less. He's getting, at least close to a K in 32 Ks and 30 and two-thirds innings pitched. His one bad start was at the Giants. He faced the Giants in Coors, was fine. He went to Great American, was fine. And then in Coors against a Royals team, and was fine. Like, those are not pushover matchups, all things considered. So I'm a Kyle Freeland believer. He had three wins in those five starts. I know people will give me pushback because it's Coors Field, but the dude's healthy right now, and he's showing he can get the job done. So I have no problem streaming Kyle Freeland in the right matchups, and sometimes that means Coors Field.
Yeah, I agree. And if you go back two starts prior to that, he had two runs allowed in six and two-thirds and zero and six. So it's gone even farther than the last 30 days for Freeland. So I want to see what his year-to-date stats were, and I forgot that he was hurt. So he still has a 5.6 ERA and a 1.51 whip because he got demolished his first two games, 10 runs, seven runs in two and a third and three and a third. So I think, and then he was injured. So maybe he was never right to start the year. It kind of makes sense, but yeah, he's not walking batters. Even if you account for those blowups, he only has one start of three or more walks. Everything else is zero, one or two. So he's not allowing those free passes, which is huge in Coors. Three of the last four have been on the road, but so if you look at his splits on the year, Freeland's ERA at home is 1.88 and his whip's 1.0. That's in four games started. So definitely some good luck, but to your point, in the right matchup at home, he's definitely on the table for a start. And I'd probably view him in the same vein as Quintana, worse park, but better skills. So I think I did start Freeland in my DC where I had him last week. He may have had a two-step. So I'm risking it with rolling him out there. Just be careful with the core starts and the matchups.
Yeah, out of those three pitchers, I think I go Singer, Freeland, Quintana. How would you rank those three?
I like that. It's kind of funny to say. I think Freeland has the highest K upside the way he's been pitching.
I agree with you on that part. Yes.
Yeah, but historically, I don't know. Singer did it was rough last year. It's just, I think I agree with the three the order you put them in.
And Michael C in the chat says, and he's only got a 63% left on base, so you could argue he's been a little unlucky as well, which is a pretty fun stat. Also, all right, JP Sears taking the mound on Monday night, popular two-star guy. We'll talk about that more in a little bit, but love what Sears has been doing. I mentioned it on last Thursday's waiver show with Ryan. He'd be one of my top priorities after Hayden Birdsong this week. He made five starts in July, picked up four wins in those five starts, 10 earned runs in 29 and a third with 30 strikeouts. Basically, two earned runs or less in four out of five. The Astros blew him up in one start. So, similar to Freeland, and that's how all these streamers are going to be. There's going to be one or two rough starts and probably three or four good starts. That's just why they're good streamers, but they're streamers nonetheless. Sears got blown up in one, great in four others. I think he's an awesome move for this week. And I think going forward, I think there's a lot to like with JP Sears. What do you think when you look at Sears?
I'm surprised he's this high at the player rater with that awful start mix in there. It's a
yep.
Well, he also has four wins, so that's really going to help. Four wins,
that's the kicker.
Yep, that'll do it. And on the year, Sears has actually pretty consistent. So he's a 4.53 ERA on the year, a 4.58 xERA, a 4.61 FIP, and a 4.82 xFIP. Let's see if the Sierra can follow suit. Yeah, 4.56 Sierra. So he's basically a 4.5 pitcher. It's pretty impressive.
That's a quality start.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually, which sometimes –
that's my quality starts suck, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, three runs in six innings, it's not going to kill your season-long ERA, but you definitely don't want better. And, the thing with Sears is no strikeouts. His K rate on the year is below 20%. It's 18.1. And it explains why he's prone to those blow-ups. But in July, though, he did have 30 Ks in 29 innings, so he kind of made up for the early season lack of strikeouts. He had 21 in May and 34 and a third innings pitch. So that's pretty bad, pretty poor ratio. So it doesn't really walk guys, only four walks in July, which is also promising. And with the way the A's are hitting, it makes sense that he got those four wins. So kind of with this, kind of the same theme, just going forward, just be careful with when you're starting Sears. I believe he said he was a two-star pitcher this week. And that's why I think he was available on my teams, and I did have him on my bid list, but I was outbid. But he's definitely a bench streamer.
Yep, he's got the White Sox tonight. The game just started. He's in the top of the first. And I forget, it's another good matchup over the weekend. Like, one you wouldn't feel bad starting. So, yeah, keep an eye on Sears. He would pivot. He'd be right around the Freeland range for me. I like that quite a bit with those two and see where it goes from there. 30th overall. Like, if you always go to the Fangraphs player right here, it gives you top 30 at the position you're looking at, basically. So, we went top 30 hitters, top 30 pitchers over the last 30 days. I wanted to bring up this name because it's discussed quite often. 30th pitcher, Jose Buto of the New York Mets. He was, made some good starts early in the year, gets sent down to the minors because pitchers got healthy, comes back, and he's been outstanding out of the bullpen for the Mets. So good that it's might not be feasible to put him back in the rotation type thing for a Mets team. Like, you want him back here. In July, in July plus one August appearance, we saw 18 and two-thirds innings with 22 strikeouts, picked up three wins, sub-1 ERA. I just wanted to ask you, because I harp on it a lot, and I get a lot of pushback and this, that, and the other, and some people agree that as the season goes on and a lot of starting pitching, like we just talked about a bunch of streamers, for crying out loud, as starting pitching gets tougher, guys like Jose Buto, guys like Ryan Walker, some of these guys that are going to get multiple innings each week with chances at wins become fantasy relevant. What's your thoughts on Jose Buto, who has been nothing but great?
In a 15, he is as good as a starter.
Bingo.
So over the last 2 weeks, Buto has five innings pitch each week, seven Ks in one, five in the other. That's probably more you're going to bet on to get from Singer if he has a single start week. Singer's more like a 3-4 K guy, and Buto's outperforming him with better ratios. And he even got a save. So one of the benefits of him going deep into games is, or going for multiple innings, is he can get the three out save to close the game. That's what he did two outings ago against the Twins. He went three innings, gave up one run, allowed four hits, struck out two, got the save. Not the cleanest of outings, but if you're getting a save from a guy who you're just trying to help save ratios, it's going to be huge. And yeah, Buto's been very popular on a lot of the podcasts I listen to, which are definitely more deeper league tailored, for sure. But even on my 12 teamer, I added him for a period of time and I had him in my lineup just for okay innings. And, but I will say those, be careful, kind of like with usually when you have people on the top of these leaderboards, but also too. So I have two stats pulled up on his rolling graphs. Buto's BABIP over the last five games is kind of in like the 140 in the 130s, but his swing strike rate is around 20%. So he's just been so nasty. He's missing bats, but, and probably when people are making contact, it's just not going anywhere. It's my hunch right now. So you're probably gonna get some batting average regression at some point in the negative sense, but when he's missing bats at the rate that he is, he's not walking batters. He's still gonna be really good. Just don't expect to get the clean five innings, no runs like he's been putting up. This is what's gonna happen is someone's probably gonna add Buto and he's gonna have that clunker and they're gonna drop him immediately afterwards. That's kind of what happens a lot too, especially with when these pitchers have such small, or like with relievers, everyone knows how they can blow up very easily. But he's pitching great, and if you're in a, even in an OC, I could maybe see starting 100%. Buto, because you're trying to save ratios potentially, and maybe not really. He could get a win though. Like he had a stretch where he had four wins in six appearances.
Yep.
One was a start, but still, he had three out of four wins and four relief outings. So anything's possible with relievers. It's just trying to find the good ones, and he's one of the good ones right now.
Yeah, no, I'm very intrigued by him. That's why I love the points you made there about if you put his weeks together, it's essentially a streamer that pitched very well every week. And good thing about guys like him, you're going to get multiple innings, usually, most outings, and usually going to be in there in pretty good spots, not just like hung out to dry for five innings, which is kind of fun also. Like you said, he could get blown up. That's baseball in a nutshell, and relievers will do that. But I love the upside of a guy like Jose Buto, and if you get one, even you could sneak you two wins in a week, like you mentioned, that'd be tremendous. So, yeah, I think he's 12 team viable as we get deeper into the season here for sure. I think there is a world where you're looking at waiver wires and a guy like Buto, you can sneak him through for a couple dollars. I think there's something for that in 12s. As we'll talk Fab right about now. So we had six pitchers, six hitters over the last 30 days. Technically, July is what we're going with there. Some surprises, some fun ones there, and we'll see how things translate throughout the month of August on that one. But Ben, let's transition. Let's talk about the week 20 Fab. And as we usually do on the show, we recap the NFBC OC 12 team leagues, and you give your 15 teams spin to it as usual, and all the other good stuff with that. And what I want to mention is obviously prices are going to go down for the most part. There'll still be some bangers out there because people forgot to spend money all season. But for the most part, you'll see some pretty relatively normal prices. The number one added player on OCs this past week was Jeffrey Springs in 204 leagues, as high as 160, as low as a dollar. Springs made his debut last week after coming back from Tommy John surgery, 3 2/3 innings, two earned runs, three Ks against the Miami Marlins. To top it off, Springs had a two-step this week at St. Louis and then versus Baltimore. What are your thoughts on Springs? Like, the velocity was down a bit, what you kind of expect probably coming back from this injury. I like Springs a lot. I was not overly invested in Fab this week on Springs. What are you thinking with when it comes to Jeffrey Springs?
He could be a trap, honestly. It's not because he's not good. It's just because he's coming back from Tommy John. And like what we were saying with Robbie Ray and the other injured pitchers who came back over the last couple of weeks, it's, especially with Tommy John, it's the control that is always questionable right away. It's how long do they need to get comfortable on the mound again? And also with Springs, so like when you're comparing Spring, I felt like Springs was getting thrown around with Ray and Kershaw a lot as the big Fab ads that people were anticipating being available. And I get it, because Springs was so good in 2022. But that's the thing. That's like the one time he was a relatively tried starter. He had 25 starts that year, 33 total games. So he was out of the bullpen part of the season. And then last year, like everything looked great for his breakout. He had 16 innings pitch over his three-game start. I think one was cut short when he got hurt. And he had 24 Ks over 16 innings, which is phenomenal. He had only one run allowed and like eight base runners, so he had a 0.5 whip. But his sample size is so small, and I didn't want to – kind of like what you were saying with how you were bidding for Springs, I didn't want to go too crazy. A, also because of how poor the matchup was. He didn't look that good in his first outing back. It is his first outing back, but, I mean, we need these guys to perform on our teams if we're going to be adding them. And Springs may need some time. I remember looking to see how the Rays were doing. They're kind of in the race still. I don't know if they have incentive to push him too hard and how far can he go, like how deep can he go into the games. The Rays are already very careful with their pitchers. And this is a guy who's he's going to be 34 next month, and he or 32, excuse me, and he's only has one partial year as a starter. So how crazy are they going to go? The wins probably won't be there for Springs. Hopefully the ratios are, but like I said, if he's walking guys because he's trying to get his command back, he could just be hurting your whip and you're not really getting much out of it. So I definitely had bids in for Springs, but I think my largest one I was just trying to look at some quickly was like $34. The other one was $8. And yeah, if someone was spending big on him, like 160 plus, I think they might get disappointed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That's kind of why I was hesitant. I'm like, he's a good pitcher. Yes. What are the Rays going to let him do this year? That was like my biggest concern. And you nailed it with what you're talking about there. And I think he's good, but I'm going to wait and see on that one. The next most added player, the second most added player, is Coby Mayo of the Baltimore Orioles. Jackson Holliday could not make the list because he's next and he was already in a few leagues. So Coby Mayo was added in 190 leagues. Surprising, that means he wasn't added in every league. Folks, go check your OC wires. He was added for $314 max, $1 minimum, because we are talking OCs here. Over the three games he played since getting called up, he has zero hits and one run scored. Minor league numbers were good. I wasn't, again, over the moon. Again, it's also late in the year. I have like 100 or 150 bucks in most leagues. So I'm being, you know, more team needs than just going new shiny toy. But Coby Mayo wasn't really high on my list. I know he was on others. What were your thoughts on Coby Mayo?
I'll be honest. So I jotted him down in my Excel file that I used to prep for Fab, and I forgot to bid on him because I was looking at like how people are doing recently. I didn't need third base in a lot of spots, but I'm not upset that I missed out on Mayo. So he's another rookie, and we've seen how rookies have done this year. Not for the most part, not very well. He's hitting down in the lineup. It is a great lineup in Baltimore, but he's been hitting eighth and sixth. So I mean, six is kind of intriguing. It was versus a lefty though, so I think a lot of the regulars were out for that game. And you did say he had great numbers in AAA or the minors at least, and he did. It's just the transition always gets me scared, and he could just be another Kyle Manzardo or pick your rookie bust of the year, and that could be Mayo. Or your Orioles rookie bust, like Hurstad's back down in the minors right now. So who knows what happens? Maybe Mateo comes back or Ramon Urias, and they kick Mayo out of the lineup because he's not performing. I don't know what the timetables are for those guys, but I think Mateo had a little bit of a serious injury. So maybe Urias comes back and kicks him out. But yeah, I mean, and you point out the stats for Mayo. He hasn't really gotten off to the best of starts. I think he struck out more than over half of his at-bats. So not too good. I mean, he's a rookie, but I just wouldn't get my hopes up for a impact bat last couple months.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, if he produces well, kudos, awesome. Ramon Urias is still around. Mateo's probably out till at least middle of September, if not more. So, Coby Mayo's got a long potential window here, but he's got to start producing pretty quick because this Orioles team is slumping, and they want to continue a playoff push. So, we'll kind of see how this one rolls. But yeah, he needs to get it going quickly, to say the least. All right, next is his teammate, Jackson Holliday. And we talked about failed Orioles prospects. Holliday sucked his first time around. I'll say it bluntly. It wasn't good. But like we see with a lot of these guys, they go down, they work on things, they come back, and Yahtzee. Like, good things are happening. And Holliday adjusted his swing. And since he's come back on July 31st, Holliday has hit safely in four or five games. He's got two home runs, seven RBIs, hitting .389, 24% K rate. Like, everything, it's small sample, but much more improved overall production, not just the numbers, just what he's doing at the plate. And he's going to basically fill in. He's filling in for Mateo for now, where Coby Mayo's filling in for Westberg is pretty much out for the year. Obviously, if Mayo stinks, that could change and whatever. But I was interested in Holliday. I think I actually got him for cheap because OCs are awesome like that. But I couldn't break the bank. What are your thoughts on Jackson Holliday? Because I was much more intrigued this time around, where I didn't even bid on him the first time he was called up.
Yeah, so this is – I didn't have as many options as you did, unfortunately. So in the main events, I think he was already added. He's probably stashed for a while. And then I did have him available in my OLAC, and I bid 128, and I was the runner-up. I think he went for like 250 on that one. So I got shut out. I was second place, though. I could have used the steals and the middle infield help. But looking at his minor league stats for the year, he only has 8 steals in 73 games. So I don't know why he's not running Holliday. But he had 10 homers in like half a season, so that's fine. And he's gotten off to a great start, like with the two home runs, one being the grand slam. I'm definitely more confident in Holliday producing versus Mayo. Holiday already failed, and he went down working some things, I'm assuming, and he came up and started off really strong. So it's good to see that. It's I don't know what the profile will be like. That's kind of one of the issues. I think I remember talking about maybe like Evan Carter preseason or Wyatt Langford, like is what, or even actually Jackson Holiday too. I remember talking, I was on Joe Arrico's show early on, and he's calling Holiday a bust where he's getting drafted. It's because I don't know what these guys, what are they going to do? Like, he's not running. I thought he was supposed to be fast. I don't see him magically picking up the pace. I mean, I'm sure he's fast enough to steal a lot of bases, but it's just it's tough to figure out what you're going to get from these rookies. And but definitely so far, the homers are good for Holiday. It's just like I said, I was in on him. I have no issues with bidding big on him if you have the money to spend. It's just a matter of what's he going to do after this nice little hot start he's gotten off to. And I'm sure they'll keep him in the lineup because I forgot about Westberg being injured for the year, or most of it, if not the whole year. So that's good for the playing time for him and Mayo. It's just, can they keep performing?
Yeah. And the one thing I like to see with what the Orioles are doing with Mayo and Mayo and Holiday is putting them down in the order, not putting the pressure on them. Let these other guys hit up top and we'll come and, you know, Holiday actually moved up, I think, a couple spots over the last few days because he's actually hitting perfect role. I think they want him in the top two up there with Couser. But he's basically, at least they're going to make him earn it instead of like just throwing him into the fire again, because they did that the first time. Didn't go so well. So I like the way they're going about it. And I'm pulling for Holiday. I shortened the swing up. I like the adjustments. Again, small sample. Slumps can happen. But I'm much more intrigued this time around, especially for the prices I got him at.
He's not even 21 either.
Yeah, can't even drink. Crazy, man. And his brother's his brother's good too. I think he's in high school still, or he's a senior. Like, I saw videos of him. It's ridiculous. Genes, certain families blessed. That's all I'm gonna say. Blessed. It's just insane. It's very unfair. Trust me, very unfair. No, I got the bald gene, the fat gene. You name it. These guys are all just athletes. It's unbelievable what they can put together. It's piss excellence. All right, let's talk about Hayden Birdsong. This was my top priority wherever you needed pitching this week. And he was added in 133 leagues, as high as 222, as low as a dollar. Some people broke the bank for Birdsong, but I was just like cautious because I'm like, it's the Giants. They did. We talked about it on the show many times. Like, they'd send him down, and I just, the way they're working, it almost went to a T the way I was talking about it. And then the boom happened. Alex Cobb, kind of out of nowhere, gets traded. And immediately, I was talking to Bloomfield and whatever. I'm like, hey, Birdsong's in the rotation now. It's happening. We're good. And it is for now. He's still a rookie. I could see weird stuff happening because it's the Giants. But Birdsong has got a spot in the rotation. He's been great when given opportunity to pitch so far this year. Strikeout numbers are good, both versus Colorado. So grain of salt, that one. But I'm a Birdsong fan. I know you were, or maybe still are. So what's your thoughts on Hayden Birdsong?
I will spoil it. I did add him back where I dropped him, so I was happy with that, especially for the two steps. So I think a lot of this is driven by the Washington start tomorrow and then the Detroit start on Sunday.
That doesn't hurt.
No, not at all. That was probably the best widely available two start option on waivers this week. And I have to give you props because I remember seeing your tweet about how he went, I believe it was Sacramento, right? Was it
San Jose? San Jose instead of Sacramento. So I'm like, he's coming back soon, folks. Like, yep, keep an eye on that.
Bubba called it. Yeah, he was dead on with that. And so the K's are great for Birdsong. And I was looking at him earlier again today. The one thing that is a little concerning, though, is the walk rate. So he has 15 walks and 30 and a third innings on the year, but he's 38 strikeouts. So, and if you look at a game by game basis, it's either three or two. So nothing like with Quintana where he's walking five out of the clip. I mean, I don't know if I'd rather have a wild game every now and then versus consistently a little wild like Birdsong is, but the K's are great. 20 and 11 innings versus the Rockies, go figure. One was in Coors though, so that's good to see. Yeah. That's kind of one of my radar. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a, I don't know if I would consider him like a more of a all the time start play. Kind of go with the same theme we were talking about with Singer and Quintana and Sears. Just make sure you pick the right matchups. And like we said earlier, this is almost as good as a two step as you're going to find most weeks. And I get the ad.
Yeah, Birdsong feels like a guy, I agree, probably more of a streamer than a full go, but he's going to be an annoying streamer because it'll just come down to, if he's not walking guys, I think he can compete with anybody. If he starts walking guys, it'll be in the most annoying matchups probably when you do stream him. Like, that's how I see it happening with Birdsong, unfortunately. It's going to be one of those. Like, I think he could. I could see him going into face the Dodgers. If he's not walking them, I could see him having five or six strong innings, like really good. At the same time, I could see him going and facing, you know, the White Sox and walking five guys and struggling to get through four. Like, it's just it's just control, which with a young pitcher, good luck on that one. So
he has, I will add, he has a 14.8% swing strike rate. So that's very encouraging.
That's outstanding.
Yep. I'm sure that's heavily weighted from the Rocky start, but still, that's definitely a good sign.
Yeah, because that one, especially the game in Coors, he had so many whiffs. It was ridiculous. He just dominated those guys that game. So that was a thing of beauty. The next most added was J.P. Sears, 127 leagues, as high as 56, as low as a dollar. I mentioned the two-step for Sears. He has the White Sox right now on Monday, Toronto on Sunday. We talked a lot about Sears. Did you have anything else you'd like to add on him?
Nope. This makes sense for the two-step.
All right. Victor Vodnik, another guy that I was actually got some shares of last week when we talked on this show. So I'm kind of glad I got in a little early on this party. Adding 112 leagues, as high as 60, as low as a dollar. And I'll preface, yes, any Rockies pitcher, talked about Freeland already, is dicey. But Vodnik's at least, you know, held the role, and he's the locked-in closer, quote-unquote, for now. He's got five saves over his last, like, 13 outings with a win in there, about a K per inning. It's the Rockies. I get it. How many saves can he get? The whole narrative. But what's your thoughts on Victor Vodnik? Because we had a lot of options to speculate on saves this weekend. At least with Vodnik, he's in the closing role.
Right, yeah. He's one of the – yeah, so the role is huge for these spec plays on for the closers. And at that point, he's not even a spec play. It's just like, okay, he's the closer for the Rockies. How much do you want to pay for him? And I will say, though, with Vodnik, so it's not that terrible under the hood. He has a 3.7 ERA on the season, a 3.80 FIP, and a 3.98 XFIP. That's not too bad when you put cores into play. He has an X ERA of 4.39. The K-minus walk isn't the best. It's only 11.2% because he walks 10% of batters. So that's a little scary. Let's see the swing strike rate. Yeah, the swing strike rate for Vodnik is only 8.9% on the year. But if you need saves, you need saves. And they could have picked the worst pitcher to be their closer, I think. And I think he was already taken in my 15s, Vodnik. So I wasn't able to bid on him this week amongst the other options that came up from the trade deadline. But if he was available, I probably would have kept him near the top just because he definitely has the role, it seems like, going forward.
Yep, 100% with you. So I'm a fan of that one. We'll get to some more spec relievers here in a minute, but we'll start with a starting pitcher, David Festa. He had a two-step this week. He faced on Monday, faced the Cubs, five innings, no runs, nine strikeouts. Pretty good stuff so far if you added him. Gets Cleveland over the weekend. That's always a dicey one with that offense. It's cooled down a bit, but still very good. But Festa's another one kind of like opposite of the Holiday because he's the pitcher. Big prospect pedigree, first two starts-ups, didn't go well, goes back to the minors. Since he's come back, much better. It's always a walk thing with him as well. So I was interested in a guy like David Festa. I think he's there. He's filling in for Chris Paddock right now. Who knows how long Paddock's out for, but in reality, I think Festa's better than Chris Paddock. I think we can all agree on that as well. So what was your thoughts on David Festa when it came to Fab this week?
I think he's another guy where he got scooped up pretty a week or two ahead of this week in the main events in the 15s. So I remember, I think I wrote about Festa when he first got called up. And the one thing that was concerning was the walk rate. But so far in the majors, he only has four walks in 19 and a third innings. So that's a great sign versus 21 strikeouts. So it's really just the batted ball luck has not been there for Festa so far. And he got the win in his first start, but then against the Tigers, he got hit kind of hard, seven runs, nine hits in five innings. But it's good to see him come back strong. And the one thing, so he always had the high strikeout rate in the minors. That's kind of why he was appealing as an ad when he first got called up. So it's good to see him still striking out guys. And you mentioned Paddock's injury. So I think hopefully Festa sticks around because I don't know. I'm not sure what Paddock's injury is, but coming back from the Tommy John, he already had a pretty strong workload. He was pitching pretty regularly throughout the year. And who knows if that contributed to whatever is wrong with him now. And I also heard on Waxman's podcast that apparently people were adding Matt Festa. I did not realize that was an option. So hopefully that didn't happen for any of the listeners. But just be careful with those.
That's rough.
Multiple name guys. But yeah, I like Festa. Like we were talking about the Twins as the matchup against Singer. They have a good lineup. And I don't know how you and Ryan always say that they change lines with maximizing their players.
The hockey
team. Yep, it's like those northern teams, I guess. I don't know. They have hockey in their blood. Yeah, yep. It's very fitting. Yeah, so I like Festa. Hopefully he sticks around. He's definitely a little more appealing than the guys we talked about earlier, like Quintana. And I don't know if I put Singer ahead of Festa, but I definitely prefer Festa to guys like Quintana and Sears. And I don't know if I pick Springs. I probably prefer Springs, but honestly, the workload for Festa might be better. And he might get more.
I'd take Festa still at this point, because at least they'll let him go 5+ every time out. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely go Festa over Springs, and Birdsong is a little bit closer. They're both the rookies with the high strikeout rate. It's I know you probably go Birdsong because you're a Giants fan, but
I'm going Birdsong for sure. I think the talent's just like insane. Like Michael C was in here; he's a Giants fan also. He's just got 3 pitches that'll have a 39% plus whiff rate so far. Like that's big boy stuff with Birdsong. It's just control. But yeah, I love Festa. I was a fan the first time through. That burned me. I'll jump back on this time. It's just a matter of sticking up. And Paddock keeps getting pushed back. And a lot of it's also, like you said, is I think they're trying to limit his innings because they said at the beginning of the year they want him for the postseason. Who knows why, but they do. So I think it's a great time to get Festa some innings at the big league level. And the Springs thing is, like, I don't want to keep making people think I'm just, like, you know, crashing the party on Springs here. I'm hoping he pitches well the rest of the year and gets his arm built up so I can draft him next year. Like, I love Springs' talent. I just don't think this is the window where the Rays are going to let him, you know, run wild, as you mentioned earlier. I guess don't see that happening. So that's my only concern on that one.
I brought it up again too, so you can yell at me this time.
No. It's because every time he gets brought up, I always be like, no. Like, no, it's not a negative thing towards Springs. It's more just like the reality of a fantasy purpose, like it's right. Not going to fit the mold right now. Now, if they were to have Springs be the backup to a opener, different story, but that doesn't seem to be the case right now.
I agree.
All right, AJ Puck, I want to bring this up for you, buddy. He was at it in 100 leagues, as high as 55, as low as a dollar. I think he got a save Sunday, Ben. I think he got a save. The floor is yours. I'm just glad you have this. The floor is yours.
No, so my patience was rewarded with the Puck save. So I've been starting Puck in my one main event just for the ratios and the Ks. So if you go week by week, so since week 13, he had either 4 or 5 strikeouts per week, kind of like what we were saying with Jose Budo. In week 18, he had 7 Ks and a win in 4 innings, no runs and 1 base runner allowed. And then last week, a little less work, only 2 innings, but he got that save. And then that's why Puck ended up being on the waiver or on the waiver list here. And so I was looking at the box score earlier for the Diamondbacks, and they ended up winning the game, so that's good. But so Puck relieved Ginkle in the 8th, pitched to 1 batter, struck him out. Then Ryan Thompson came in for the save in the 9th. He blew the save, though.
Oh, no.
Yep, so Ryan Thompson gave up the run, but they ended up winning the next inning, and then Justin Martinez got the save.
So Thompson got the win, though.
Yeah, so he got the win. Martinez got the save. Puck didn't do anything. But the fact that Thompson was relieved by Puck for the save on Sunday has me encouraged. I'm not sure how the lefties stack up in the bullpen. That's the one thing with Puck.
They have one other lefty.
So maybe they could spare him as the closer. I mean, he's been as dominant of a reliever as anyone, I'm sure, over the last however long since he's been moved to the bullpen. And his spot is definitely in the bullpen. It's just a matter of if the Diamondbacks want to give Sewald another shot. I think he got the win on Sunday. He pitched like the 6th or 5th or 7th or something like that. He pitched early in the game, Sewald. So I'll talk about a little like with my strategy with having Puck on my roster for our ads when we get to him. But I put Puck in the same light as Budo, especially for a deeper league. Just hold on to him. He might get a save like he did on Sunday. He might bail somebody out. Or if he's not going to get a save, he's not named the closer, he's going to give you hopefully 4 to 5 Ks per week. Kind of I'll go back and pick on Singer again because he's not a high strikeout guy. But Singer averages like 3 to 5 Ks per start. Puck could do that with hopefully better ratios and maybe even a winner save. So I love Puck. This is definitely, since we're talking OCs here, it's definitely more of a save spec play. But I'm fine with that. If I needed Puck where I wanted saves, I would have added him, but I already had him on that team. So definitely a good spec. But the usage tonight is a little concerning, but it's good that Thompson blew the save for Puck's value, I think.
The one thing I'll say, and take it with whatever grain of salt you want, I'm on your side on this one, but also talking with the Welsh this morning, who's a Diamondbacks guy, lives in Arizona. He feels by season's end, if we just took – because he says he thinks they're both going to get saves still. He thinks Puck will have more saves by the end of the season, but Lavello wants to use puck in high leverage. He's flat out said it, and that's going to cost him more often than not. That's the downfall. Now, if there's not a high leverage spot, then the Knights pucks. If there's a high leverage, he's not going to get it. That's just the basics of it. So it's just going to be a frustrating one at times. So it's one of those, just play him every week because he might get three saves one week and none the next. That's just the way it's going to work. But in the end, like, I wouldn't be shocked. They're a good team that, you know, say they have 45 more games. They should win at least 25, I think. Like, there's a good chance he runs into 8 to 10 saves if things go real good. Like, there's a chance that happens. That's big for the final 2 months of the year. So that's kind of how I'm looking at the puck thing in an optimistic lens. That's where I'm kind of at on this one. All right, Parker Meadows, he's back off the IL. He was picked up in 88 leagues, as high as 38, as low as a dollar. Was hitting well in the minors, hit well for 3 games before injuring his hammy, missed a month, came back, 2 hits in his return. I love what he brings to the table here. They put him right back in the lineup, which I love to see. So Meadows was on my list. I got him a couple places. We'll talk about that. But any quick thoughts on Meadows? Because I do want to get your thoughts on some of the closers that were called up this week.
I unfortunately missed out on Parker Meadows. I did not realize he was back. It's a shame on me, but sometimes guys fall through the cracks. And he was everyone's darling in draft season. Everyone loves Parker Meadows. So, I mean, it was just so bad to start the year. Hopefully he hits a little bit better, but not too much better since I didn't get him. But definitely a good ad.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Now the fun begins. The good Dr. Foucher was added in many leagues, but the jokes, it's fun, it's a joke, but I didn't notice it's pronounced Fauché. I found out over the weekend it's Calvin Fauché, but I like to laugh, people, and that's what's good in life. Laugh's the best medicine you can have, and when you have a name like that, let's have a little fun in this world we live in these days, because it's a shit show out there, folks. But Calvin Fauché was added in 87 leagues, as high as $60, as low as a buck. Many are saying he's the guy in Miami, for whatever that's worth to you. What are your thoughts on Fauché and just the Marlins situation in general?
Turns out I had the highest bid on Fauché in the main event this past Sunday.
Oh, look at you. We'll get to that, but I'm curious what that is now.
Yeah, it was. I was mentioned on Waxman's pod. I actually added Fauché on 2 main events. So I was more aggressive with him because of who the Marlins have behind him. And I know everyone wanted Nardi to be the closer, but he's the only lefty. So I made sure to check out the options in the bullpen before I decided who I preferred more between Fauché and Nardi. And because Nardi's the only lefty, I'm like, okay, well, it's probably going to be Fauché. I believe Greg Jewett had Fauché as perceived closer going forward.
Yes, he does.
I want to confirm he does. Okay. Yeah. So that's another thing. I trust Greg. Fangraphs has a committee right now between Fauché, Nardi, and Bender. I could see Nardi getting a save versus a like lefties in the 9th. I could see that. It makes sense if he's not used previously, but this is like, we'll get into probably Hunter Harvey or Fauché and Vodnik are very similar. Like they're the guy right now, it seems like, and that's all that really matters at this point in the season. And, the walk rate isn't good for Fauché. He has 21 and 41 innings, 41 2/3. So that's, and the whip's 1.49 as a result. So he's gotten lucky with the 3.46 ERA. But if you need saves, you need saves. And the Marlins aren't the worst team. I mean, they're not, like you mentioned, they traded like half the roster away, but they still have some pieces. And you can always get a close win with a bad team. So I hopefully Fauché is the guy and gets a handful of saves going forward.
All right, I think my ear pods just went out, so you're going to have to tolerate the rest of the show from the other mic. All right, the last guy I'm going to ask you about here, though, is Hunter Harvey, added in 73 leagues, as high as 69, as low as a dollar. Got the save on Sunday, so what's your thoughts on Hunter Harvey?
This one's a little trickier, so I had to decide. Well, I'll say it now. So in that one team where I had the max bid in the main event on Fauché, I had Harvey for the same price, and I preferred Fauché to Harvey because they haven't outright said that MacArthur is not the closer, and they also have Lucas Ersig, who could also eat into Harvey's opportunity. And also Harvey hasn't been that good lately because I used to have Harvey on that team, but I dropped him for once he got traded, and I wanted Robert Garcia because I had Finnegan on that team. So I was just kind of trying to get like, to cover my bases, you know, in case I lost Finnegan. But I did like Harvey. I had him on this one team for a long time. It's just that he's been struggling lately. It feels like it's more just bad luck. He's not really walking too many guys. He has pretty good strikeout numbers on the year, I believe. He has 55 Ks and 50 2/3 innings. Harvey, only 16 walks. But like I said, Urcig there made me uneasy about committing to Harvey over someone like Fauché, who doesn't really have as much competition in my mind. I think Jewett does have Harvey as the leader of the committee. So he thinks that he Harvey's would potentially be the next guy up for a save. So I do, like I said, I trust Greg, but I think there's fewer options in Miami, so that's why I preferred Fauché. But Harvey is a good, like I said, I had the same bid for Harvey. I just preferred Fauché. So if you went for Harvey, I don't blame you.
Yeah, no, I like Harvey, but it's a mess in most of these situations. That's why I went for Vodnik. But I think Harvey's the better pitcher, but I think similar to Puck, he's the leverage guy. And like Urcig's also a leverage guy, so that just makes it real complicated. But MacArthur's been bad, so pick your poison. I think the Royals are the better team than Miami, but again, pick your poison there. They're losing 8-2 to the Red Sox tonight. So anything's possible these days. And it's just that there was a lot of these kind of spec guys this week that made things very, very difficult to try to figure out for sure. Speaking of figuring things out, Ben, let's take a look at our fab pickups of the week. I'm really looking forward to hearing this Fauché price you put out there. So if you're ready, I'm curious to hear your 15 team ad drops.
Okay. So this is, this is main event one. I did get Fauché here, but this isn't the big bid. So I had less money to spend. I got Fauché. I dropped Drew Thorpe, $34 back bid, $17 backup. So a little more reasonable there. I also added John Brebbia. I dropped Jason Foley, $4 bid, no backup. So this is a league where I'm kind of fighting for placing, and I could use a little help and save. So I'm rolling out Fauché this week, actually. I just wanted Brebbia because he's like the guy, in case something happens with Fauché, I want a third closer option, even though the White Sox will never win again because they've lost like 20 in a row, or they haven't won in June or July or something crazy. But he's a closer in case they get their act together. And then my last ad here was I added Miguel Vargas, dropped Miles Michaelis, $4. This was the bad unicorn bid, $4 runner-up. I am like in middle of the pack here, so I beat out someone ahead of me. I actually didn't start Vargas because he's been so bad, but it's more of a wait-and-see play with him. It's one of the bench bet.
For $4, why not?
Yeah, I didn't break the bank. All right, so here's the fun bid. So this is main event two. this is the one where I had so going into this week, I had Hector Neris, just a little background. I had Hector Neris, Kyle Finnegan, and AJ Puck on my team. I was anticipating Neris and or Finnegan would get traded, so I was saving money to bid on a closer in case one or both of them got dealt. So this is where I dropped. So this is the one that's competing for the overall right now. And
yeah, what spot are you in? Because I always get told I don't ask you this. So what are you in the overall by chance?
I didn't want you to bring this up, but so this team is ninth. It made it up to ninth at the start of last week. It got up to like 17th during the week, and then Sunday had a great day, and I started out today back at ninth place overall. So
outstanding.
Yeah, so I'm back in the thick of things again. It's a fun thing to be in, but it's going to be stressful for sure trying to get to the top. So going on with the Fauché bid, one of the biggest gainers in the overall for me is saves. So I have Finnegan and Neris, luckily still. So, and I also have, I'm like eight, like top five in wins, and I'm pretty high up in K's. So I don't want to fully commit to saves yet, but I'm going to start trying to like edge to maybe have. So I have Puck in my lineup this week. So hopefully he'll get a save and I'll have like three closers per se, but I didn't trust Puck being the closer for the Diamondbacks. So I really wanted to get Fauché as a perceived closer. So I would have in theory three going forward closers. So this is where I spent $108 back of a 15 and I dropped Robert Garcia. I thought people would be looking for saves. Like if the Tanner Scott manager like wanted saves or whoever has Paul Sewald, I was just surprised that people weren't really as aggressive on these closer specs. But it's fine with me. So I have like roughly three closers between Fauché, Puck, Neris, and Finnegan. Hopefully one of Puck and Fauché work out. If both do, great. I have some options, but just rolling the dice there. And I had the money to burn. So I had like over $200 left. I still have like half of that to go. So I'm not like really hurting with my fab money. So I thought it was fine to bid that much. And then my last two ads for this team were Whit Merrifield. I dropped Gio Urshela, $8, $4 backup. And I added Will Benson, dropped Josh Palacios, $8, no backup. This is where I added Martin Perez, dropped Drew Thorpe, $1, no backup. So rolling out Puck and Perez this week in that main event. Then this is main event three. I added Hayden Birdsong, dropped Drew Thorpe again, had him on all three mains. Didn't always play him, but finally got rid of him. $54, runner up of 43. So I was pretty happy with that bid. I did cost myself $54 by dropping Birdsong, but I got him back, so that's all right. I added Will Benson again, dropped Adam Duvall, $6, $5 backup. I added Seth Brown, I dropped Gio Urshela, $6, $3 backup. And I added Aaron Bummer, I dropped Cal Quantrill, $1 no backup. I just wanted Bummer as like a reliever option if I didn't like my options as starting. And then my OLAC, I dropped Harrison Bader, I dropped Trey Lipscomb, $16, $7 runner-up. I added Mitchell Parker, dropped John Gray, $14, runner-up of $8. And then once again, I added Whit Merrifield, dropped Connor Norby, $8, $3 backup.
That's a very, very productive week, one might say, for you. So I like that quite a bit. Especially, I love those little cheap bids this time of year. And I got plenty of those. So here we go. I'll start with my 15s, my OLAC, who I'm just trying to fight for my first year in a 15 OLAC, trying to get as high as I can because it's been a rough up and down. And I had a lot of money to burn because I keep losing bids. Parker Meadows, $32, $2 runner-up, dropped Joshua Palacios, who's pretty much out for the year. I went big on that because I desperately needed to replace Palacios. I needed an outfielder. Well, not a lot available in the OLAC, so I was like, I'm getting Parker, and I'm walking away. So that's how that went down, kind of how you went with Fauché. I did the same in a similar vein with Parker Meadows on that one. I added Ryan Thompson, dropped Mitch Haniger, 11-5. He was not my top option, but that's how the cookies crumbled on that one. So I those are my two ads in my OLAC. Listener League One, this one's wild because I think I only got, yeah, I got outbid on most. I got Seth Brown, dropped Trevor Larnach 3-1, added Dylan Carlson, dropped David Hamilton 3-0. Hamilton had a good Sunday, but man, he's been so inconsistent playing time and production. Auction League Two, Dylan Carlson dropped Jordan Westberg 12-0. I needed an outfielder. Added David Festa, dropped Brooks Lee 11-9. So that felt pretty good to get that Festa one in there. And my MEQ, which is all over the board price-wise, got Dylan Moore, dropped Adam Duvall 13-7. I love the flexibility of Moore playing every day at shortstop. And then I added Tyler Ferguson, dropped Andrew Heaney. He was way low on my list because I kept preaching Mason Miller's back any day. He might be back like Wednesday or Thursday now. But I did it for $4. He was by far the cheapest out of all my pitchers. And I'm like, you know what? If I put him out there and he gets me one or two saves this week, I'll take him for $4 and move on. And that's where, because he was literally, I had Fauché, I had everybody above him. And that's how that one fell. All right, how's your Yahoo looking this week?
I'm now in 12th place, so I'm definitely looking towards next year.
You've made some good trades, it sounds like, we've talked about before, so that's good.
Yeah, definitely positioning myself for next year, so it's not all bad, but just so people know who I'm adding. I streamed Cal Quantrill. I dropped Brooks Lee. Nothing that went well. I ended up dropping Quantrill afterwards. I dropped Lucas Ersig once he got traded. I added Kyle Harrison for the stream. That was definitely not good on Sunday or whatever day that was. Added Miles Michaelis for a stream. Then I had Tyler Phillips, another stream that did not go very well. He got crushed by the Mariners. Then I dropped Michaelis as well. And then, so I switched out Budo for Tyler Ferguson. I added AJ Puck here. Then I added Polanco today, and I also added Matt Wallner. So I was busy just trying to fill my roster after trading people away and stuff like that. So not the best measuring stick for 12s, but just trying to fill the roster.
I totally get it. My OC ads for the week, my first OC added JP Sears, dropped Matt Wallner 6-4. I like Wallner still, but I'm moving and shake. I have too many outfielders in my 12, so that's where we are now. Then again, I added another outfielder. I added Miguel Andujar, dropped Max Sheman 2-0. I wanted the average help compared to what Wallner would offer. And then I added Nolan Chanwal, dropped Rowdy Tellez. That stung 2-1. Rowdy's doing okay, but I'll take the hot hand of Nolan Chanwal at this point in time. Again, 2-1. I can always add Rowdy back if necessary. OC2, where I need some pitching help, I added Devin Williams, the only league he was available in on mine. Dropped Andrew Heaney, 64 to runner-up of 36. So I feel pretty good about that. I thought I had no chance to get him for $64, but okay. Added Hayden Birdsong, dropped Paul Sewald, 22-17. Added Justin Turner, dropped Max Schumann, 8-3. Added Gavin Lux, dropped Matt Wallner, 8-2. So honestly, I'm pretty happy with how those bids went down this week, which is a rarity. And now the fun one, the OC3, which has been just pure chaos this entire year. I added Hayden Birdsong, dropped Evan Phillips 11-5. Then I had three bids with no runner-ups as usual. Added Gavin Lux, and this is why I lowered my bids for one. Added Gavin Lux, dropped Rowdy Tellez 3-0. Added Miguel Andujar, dropped Max Schumann 3-0. Added Parker Meadows, dropped the 480-foot home run from Jesus Sanchez 2-0. But Sanchez has been kind of cooling down, so I'll keep, you know, 12s moving and shaking on that one. But a lot of no runner-ups as usual in my 12s, which is so much fun.
I have a question to propose for you for the NFBC or any other baseball site. So I've been trying to buy a house for a long time now. And one of the things you can do is you can offer like the step offers where you can offer up to a certain amount of money and then like $5,000 increments.
Nice. Yes.
See where I'm going? So what if we did FAB that way? So like you still have to commit to like your max bid, but you don't have to
they do the auctions. They have that format in the auctions where you can put your max bid, but it goes a dollar at a time. They do it in the auction room.
Yeah, I think I remember I heard about that. I didn't know to use it when I did my OLAC, but for FAB though, like so like if in your OC3 or even with my Colin Fauché, okay, I was willing to go up to $108, but I only had to go to like what, 18?
Yes.
I could have saved $90.
A lot of money. I think I'd be all for it, but I understand the argument against it. It's part of like the quote unquote strategy. But man, like we've talked about main events, there's usually at least kind of a formula that you could work around. Like it's not perfect. In an OC, if someone tries to tell me they know how to bid an OC, they're high. Like, there's just no way. There's zero. Like, I give you three leagues every week, and every one is different. Every one of them is different. One's, like, non-existent. Then there's a competitive one, and there's just one that just goes nuts up and down. So I think it'd be great. I could see, again, a lot of people being like, no, that's not fair. They lost out on $90. That's their fault. Well, I think we could all look back at least once every year, if not more, where we've all screwed up like that. I wouldn't call it screwing up. That's just kind of like the way it works. So I think it'd be fun. I just already know you're going to get a lot of pushback on that one.
So you're saying I shouldn't drop that in the NFBC Discord?
You should. You really should. If I would be all for it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'd love to see the reactions. But I just could see some of these elitists that are on the top of the NFBC that might fight back on that one.
I don't know. Like I said, you're still committing to what your maximum bid is. So like you're willing to bid $200 on someone, but if you only need 130, you should be able to keep the 70.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why a lot of people talk about doing auction fab. It's just too hard to get everybody to do auction fab. Same idea. That's why I said they have the technology in their auction rooms to do it. So there's no reason you shouldn't be able to do it in fab. I'm with you on that. Cause like you said, if you agree to 108 and 108 is what you had to pay because 107 is the runner-up, well, you spent 108. Right. You still lost out, or you still spent that much FAB. But yeah, I agree. Maybe you don't get penalized on the flip side. I think it, I know I'd have a lot more money this year if that was the case, especially in that OC3 where I have like no runner-up bids ever. Like that would be a fun one for sure.
You'd have like $900 left.
Yeah. It'd be, man, who's the next prospect? No, I was kidding. But I'm with you on that. It'd be fun to see how that plays out. All right, got a couple listener questions. Yeah, it probably won't happen, but I'd love to see it. A couple listener questions before we head on out of here. Our buddy BP at futures_bet says, unfortunately, I don't have enough FAB to get Flaherty or Fede in my NL-only leagues, so I'll try to grab one or two of the relievers, rank them saves plus hold leagues. Thanks. I don't see what relievers he's talking about.
I didn't either, but I'm going to try to help him out. So I think he was going off of like the NL guys who we talked about. So I made a list. I said Puck 1, Harvey 2. Oh, Ersic's the wrong league.
Harvey's not NL only.
Oh, you're right. He's on the Royals now. So it'd be Puck, Fauché, Thompson, Vodnik. I don't know. There's four options. Add AJ Puck.
That's fair. Yeah, add Puck and then add Vodnik. That'd be my, like, I'm a Vodnik. I'm going to either sink or swim with that ship. So it'll be fun. And then Dave Petroziello says, I just got into the PCA business. On OC3, I lead in home runs and RBIs, but I'm third to last in steals. But a handful of steals can make me 3 league points. He's been better at hitting the ball harder lately. I'm hoping it's a young prospect with 200 at-bats starting to get it. What do you say? I want to hear your thoughts first because I've talked about PCA quite a bit.
Yeah, I added him at one point, and I ended up dropping PCA, and now I've missed out on all this goodness. It's all right, though. But So I think he's good for that scenario that Dave outlined for us. The lineup spot does stink because he's hitting like eighth or ninth for the Cubs, but he's playing against all the time now versus righties, which is good. At least I would just say though, since you have those leads in homers and RBI, just make sure that he's not causing you to lose those leads in homers and RBI. Just carefully monitor the distance between you and your competitors. But yeah, I think it's fine to put him out there. He is playing very well. He's hitting like 250 plus last 2 weeks with, I think, at least two steals both weeks too. So he's doing what Dave wants him to do. And I would, like I said, just be careful with your other standings.
Yeah. If you're looking for save or for steals, sure, go for it. I'm still very tepid on him. Like, the batting average still concerns me a bit. Like, if you go through the whole month of July, it's 218. If you just want to go since like the 27th, which is kind of more, I think, what people are talking about, if you want like a smaller window, we have seen improvements. He's hitting 323 over that span with three steals. So that's great, as he was hinting at. I'm just still thinking it's kind of like a less than 10% K rate, which is a great improvement, but just kind of like, how much is this consistency? Because we've seen him be streaky already this year. That's my only concern with him. But yeah, if you're looking for strictly steals to gain points, not a bad option. Because obviously, I'm guessing Xavier Edwards is gone because you are a smart player, Dave. So I know we would have checked that box if so. So yeah, if you have to, I think it's an option for sure. All right, that'll wrap us up this week, Ben. Another doozy, another fun one. A lot of fun closing talk and cool Fab week, actually. Like, as the season goes on, usually Fab gets kind of more and more boring. So far, it hasn't, actually. So that's been exciting so far. So any final thoughts before we head out of here on another week of Fab Reviewed?
It was good because we got the aftermath of the trade deadline. So that's why we had all those interesting players to talk about. And one thing I thought of when you're talking about Dave's question was Victor Scott got called up, but he didn't start the first day. So
I don't think he'll play every day.
Yeah, I think he might be a wasted Fab bet, Ed. But yeah, it was definitely a good week of Fab to discuss. And thanks again for having me on. It's always fun.
Yep. We'll be back at this next week. So get ready. We'll have some fun with that. And we'll recap week 21 as we're inching closer to the end of the season. See what two steps people overpay for or don't. We'll see. See who wins and who's the new closer in certain ballparks. That'll be fun. As I mentioned, some of these guys were not added in all formats, like Kobe Mayo for one and others. So that'll be exciting for our OC recaps and much more. But until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BenBreakingBen_T and his work at Sports Ethos. Forgot to plug that this week, but you guys know the drill there. I'm on Twitter at @BDIntrick. Until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 682. Catch y'all later.